Imagine a company where employees were constantly told, stick to what works. That was 3M in the mid-20th century. 3M had a rigid structure, and they focused heavily on improving existing products rather than taking risks on new ones. But then came a radical shift. Leadership introduced the 15% rule, an initiative that would allow employees to spend 15% of their time working on what they would call passion projects. This simple change gave birth to a product that I, for one, could hardly imagine my professional life without, the Post-it notes. And here is how the story goes about the Post-it notes. Dr. Spencer Silver, a 3M scientist, had discovered a weak, reusable adhesive, but the company didn't see an immediate use for it. His idea languished until another employee, Art Fry, saw its potential as a bookmark that wouldn't fall out of his hymn book. Thanks to the 15% rule, Fry had the freedom to experiment, and Post-it notes became one of 3M's most successful products. By creating this space for innovation rather than stifling it, 3M transformed from a slow-moving industrial company into a world leader in innovation. Today, they hold over 118,000 patents and continue to be at the forefront of multiple industries. Welcome to Change That Works, a podcast by ICG about change, leadership, and innovation that takes you behind the scenes. Today's host will be Alexandra Popescu-Zorica. I have today with me Richard Roelvink, straight from the Netherlands, one of the countries where I return to as often as I can with the same great pleasure and excitement. Really happy to have you here with me, Richard. Please say hello to Netherlands from me.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Alexandra. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure, Richard. Now, before we start, I would like to say a few words about yourself. So, Richard, you are an independent interim manager and you are a consultant and coach in ICG Rhine Consult.
That's right.
You have quite an extensive experience in strategic development and transformation of corporates, as well as private equity-owned enterprises. I know that now, Richard, you are working to help organizations, to help teams and individuals to rediscover their growth potential. For you, Richard, there are no old roads to new directions. I really like this saying and I really like this motto of yours. So I guess it goes without saying that today we are going to talk a lot about innovation and more specifically about the hindering factors to innovation in large organizations and how to overcome them.
This is quite an introduction, Alexandra. So let's see if I can live up to expectations.
Well, you know, Richard, I've already told you that every time I talk about innovation, I like to start my discussion by asking my guest, what is innovation? Because I found it throughout time that innovation has different meanings to people and to organizations. So what is your definition for innovation?
Well, again, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to contribute to your initiative. I think that innovation in general and as a theme really deserves the attention of all professionals who have the ambition to push the boundaries of their own business and even their category. Basically, I see two big chunks of innovation. On the one hand, business process innovation. I will work this out later on. And on the other hand, product or service innovation. I think business innovation has a broad scope. It's about transformation. It's about change. It's about designing processes and making this work in the most efficient and effective way so that companies can achieve their strategic ambitions. It has all to do with all kind of different services that we also offer within ICG, change management, organizational development, operational excellence, leadership and team development, and even cultural development. So business innovation is rather broad. However, I think a carve out of this is what I call product or service innovation that really matters on the product or the offer that you deliver as a company. It has a much smaller scope than business innovation, and it is focused on what I call identifying, designing, and exploiting relevant and differentiating concepts so that the current and new customers will start or keep buying from you. On top of that, I see innovation and renovation. And these are really also two different things. Innovation has all to do with adding substantial newness to ideas or to current concepts, while renovation is based on adding relatively small incremental modifications. Let me give you an example from the food industry, where I've been working in quite a long time. For example, if you take a new flavor or a new pack size, then in my view, this is just not innovation. It is renovation. I'm sure that the average marketer within the industry would probably disagree with me, because the new flavor or the new pack size is for him probably the biggest innovation on earth of the last 100 years. But if we, for instance, take Activia or Nespresso brands, we all know, I hope, these are really innovations based on entirely new views on the dairy market, respectively the coffee market, because they attracted entirely new consumer segments through entirely new product formats with entirely new distribution channels, adding substantial newness to the category. So this is what innovation is about. All the rest is just renovation. This is my view on innovation, Alexandra.
Thank you for that extensive answer. I really like that you've built this basket where you've put a lot of ideas. So basically, everyone listening to us can pick a theme or can pick a direction which you've referred to in terms of innovation. So maybe it's just something incremental, maybe it's only about product services, or it can be something that transformational as into changing the whole business model, the whole architecture. I'm also a big fan of Nespresso, not only the coffee, which I drink every day and no commercial here, but also about the way that they've taken this idea outside of the organization, they've turned it into a spin-off and they've really made it an innovation, a new business model.
It took them about 40 years to get to the level that they are right now. And obviously, they went through all kind of setbacks and they lost a lot of time and money in the last years. But the strong thing is they had a very clear view on where the coffee market would head to. And they had a clear view on their role to play in this market. They wanted to move ahead of the curve, and they really did it with a great level of stamina and persistence and clarity on this strategy.
You did point out two things that are very important. Also, when talking about what's hindering innovation in organizations, you talked about setbacks. We need to be aware of whenever we start to innovate. It's not a straight line towards something. It's a process that will most likely involve setbacks, especially if we want to innovate in the business model or create something completely new and disruptive. And you mentioned the 40 years. And in my work experience, people really want results in 1 year.
Yeah.
And whenever I talk about Nespresso, I tell them about their resilience and how long it took them to innovate. Maybe we are doing things much faster now. But it's about this understanding and this mental commitment and resilience towards accepting the setbacks and the long time that it may take for you to really innovate and create something disruptive in the market.
Yeah, I think Rome is also not built in one day. So
when I want to point out towards the important and successful innovation ecosystems in Europe, and I already said that I'm in love with the Netherlands, but that's not the reason why I always refer to the Netherlands as the country that, in my opinion, has managed to create an environment that really fosters and encourages research, encourages innovation and the development of startups. And at the forefront of this really great nation, I would like you to tell us a bit more about what is the business environment in the Netherlands and why are you guys so responsive towards innovation?
In general, I tend to agree with you. And this is really an inside-out view. I love your outside-in view. But I think in general, the Netherlands have a positive attitude towards innovation. And yes, there is a favorable investment climate. And I think that it's because of our open economy and our historical, I would say, DNA of exploring the world with a well-developed Dutch VOC trading mentality. So that is probably driving your perception. However, I think that in the last, 3 to 5 years, things gradually changed for worse in the Netherlands. So currently there are more and more political influences and limiting legislation on tax, on sustainability, on governments. A lot of red tape is coming up. On top of that, we have also high energy prices, also fueled by the war, of course. But in comparison to the surrounding countries, we are up to four times more expensive in energy than in other countries. So you can imagine that we have a problem right now, and many companies and industries are considering to leave the country. So that is hopefully a temporary situation, but it's a risk.
Worked and collaborated with big multinationals from the Netherlands. I did recognize, I did work for two of them in the past, and there is entrepreneurial DNA and innovativeness in this organization. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I noticed in the past 7-8 years that in this large organization, they've been taken over by the complexities of the business environment, of their own business model, and they became more rigid and more resistant to change. And I believe this is something that it's happening in general with large organizations. The larger that you become, the more complex your business it is, and you become more rigid, and you resist change because you don't want to lose what you've worked so hard to accomplish up to that point. I want to move with this train of thoughts. I would like us to move into what are the hindering factors of innovation in these large organizations, of course, besides what I've mentioned, the complexity, rigidity, and the resistance to change.
I recognize some of the hindering factors or barriers, if you allow me to call them like that, that you just mentioned. At the same time, it's not an easy one, but let me try to mention some of the barriers to innovation that I experienced. One thing became rather clear to me, and I really see this as a pattern, that many big companies, the bigger they become, actually, the more complacent they become. Big corporates, they have grown big because they are and were successful in the past. So they were reconfirmed in their approach. But we all know in this ever-changing world, these big companies, they can be made obsolete in a, I would say, second. We all know the examples of that, where because they simply cannot react to all these external changes, some of which small competitive startups are much more able to react to. And then they are hard hit in their core business. And then what you see actually is that they are able to react to it. So the principle of too big to fail doesn't hold anymore in this world. And some of these big companies have the tendency to become complacent, inert, and sometimes even arrogant. They become what I call big fat cats, as they lost their ability to act on signals crucial to the future of their businesses. As the saying goes, a sleeping duck is easy to shoot. They better be aware of what's happening around them and to respond to that. And we all know the bad examples like Nokia, Kodak, Polaroid. They made themselves obsolete in a couple of years and never went back to the old situation. Number two is probably lack of clarity. That's a very simple one. But I think the leadership has only one big responsibility, is to make clear what their vision is and what their strategy is. The company objectives are insufficiently known and understood and practiced by many of the people in the rest of the organization. That is what I least found out in my experience working with big corporates. So if you would ask, let's say, the top 50 leadership in a corporate about their key objectives and strategies, my experience is that in many cases, you will end up with many different answers, let alone what happens if you extend this question to other employees in organizations. They are seem to be busy going nowhere, and that's a big danger. And the last, I think, barrier is lack of commitment. What I saw is a lot of internal politics, turf wars, lack of alignment, that are the most critical barriers to successful innovation. So you can have a very solid project charter for innovation, covering a roadmap, good governance, sufficient resources. And it seems that they have the impression that everything is done and is well structured to make innovation successful. But at the end of the day, it comes down to commitment of all the stakeholders involved and to make sure that they have a shared view on the need for innovation. So these are the three main barriers I saw happening based on my experience. Complacency, lack of clarity, lack of commitment in the leadership.
I like the idea that a sleeping duck is easy to shoot. That's a second quote that I will take from you this podcast. I hope you have some more for me. I also know about the thing about the vision and I was discussing at a certain point with the founder of a startup, the smaller company in Romania, but a guy with a very good and solid understanding of what innovation is and how this complex environment is unfolding in front of our eyes. And he was saying the same thing about how important it is to have clarity on the objectives and to have clarity for the people, for them to know where to go. On the other hand, he brought this to my attention as a concept. He said that the world is so changing that the vision has to be floating. So you cannot have this fixed vision of the future and guide people towards a very, let's say, stubborn maybe vision. You have to also be willing to change your vision if the environment changes, but that should never stop you from clearly explaining it to people where they should go and how the vision is changing. Idea of the floating vision that we can no longer say we're going to do that in 10 years. Okay, we have a vision where we would want to be, but how this future is going to look like and what it's going to be our role, that it's something that we will work our way as long as we go, because everything is so changing.
Yeah, I hear what you say. At the same time, I have a little bit my doubts on it. I think a vision is really a long-term thing. I think time is crucial. When I was a young marketer, we worked on 3 to 5 on middle-term plans. In this new world, the current world, this is extremely impossible. What you saw happening is that the longest time aspect that we now use is probably 3 years. So in that respect, I agree with you that we have to become much more floating and flexible. And I would say, stick to your vision. Always make sure that you communicate about it in a very clear way to everybody, but at the same time, manage the time aspect and prepare for different scenarios and strategies to be capable of responding to the current situation.
Richard, you have international experience. That's what I was also mentioning about yourself at the beginning. And you've talked about these hindering factors. We talked before about the Netherlands, so maybe people are making a connection now, these hindering factors to the multinational from the Netherlands. But I would like to ask you if these hindering factors are factors that are the same in all large organizations, or do they differ? How they differ?
Not an easy to answer question, but I think in general, they differ depending on the business category you're in and its dynamics, depending on trends and developments, the size of the company, cultural background, the structure and diversity of the board of the leadership. Allow me to elaborate probably on that last one, the structure of the leadership. I just bumped into a recent research 1 week ago executed by a Dutch consultancy, where the conclusion was that 80 to 95% of time spent in the board focuses on financial matters, on governance and risk management. So talking about innovation, there's maximum 20%, 5 to 20% left to discuss and reflect on innovation by the leadership. So innovation is simply not on their radar. It's not a key theme. And when it is discussed, then it is framed as a risk, because these guys are wired, so they're educated and wired, the majority of them, out of a financial background, because they mainly exist of people with very little experience themselves with innovation. So they have a tendency to look at it as a risk. On the other hand, I think the reaction is also understandable, because from another research, we know that 70% of innovation projects fail. So that's, of course, a trade-off. What is the best thing to do? And that makes the boards hesitant and cautious in their reaction to innovation. At the same time, what we know for sure in this VUCA world, if we do not innovate, we have a 100% chance, you don't need any research for that, to become obsolete. So it's really a matter of to innovate or to die. So somehow we have to deal with innovation. So you'd better prepare for it, fight the barriers, and become successful through innovation.
At a certain point, a director from our customers asked me, how can we speed up our results in innovation? And my answer, I don't think that was that satisfactory for him, but I said, the only thing you can do is innovate more, because I don't think there is any kind of shortcut or any kind of successful recipe to innovate better or faster. Gaining experience in that topic and allocating more resources to them.
innovation is, because it is so risky, and because it is so complex and uncertain, you have to make sure that A, it doesn't become a hobby horse of just one small department or even worse, one individual, but it is really a shared responsibility to stay relevant for the whole company. So that also means that more than one department should work on it. And for that, you need to communicate about it on a regular basis. Would you allow me to elaborate a little bit more on that and to come up with some solutions how to mitigate the barriers that I just mentioned? I call them the remedies. Let's start with complacency. I think stimulate maximum curiosity in your company. Create an open-minded culture as to what happens in your category, what happens with your customers. But also be razor sharp on what is happening with your competitors. What are they up to? All means are possible. Steal with pride, I would say, and make sure that you have an open radar as to all these aspects. Think the opposite, probably. Kill your darlings. Challenge the status quo. These are just mentality things that you can inject in your corporate culture as a leader. Everything can be asked. There are no stupid questions, and stimulate people to challenge the current status. Ask the inconvenience questions and don't be afraid for the confrontation for the sake of a better alternative. And that takes a while, but it is possible.
What you are saying, Richard, is that this is an investment in building a different mindset that's starting from the leadership, top management, and then it's going down into the organization. And then it's also instilling in people a different mindset and a different way of thinking about things. And then, of course, eventually acting upon those.
Exactly. Build another mentality and to build on that, to communicate in a clear way about it. To fight lack of clarity, you must relate innovation to the bigger picture. So how does it fit into the vision, the mission, and the strategy of your company? Then you make innovation as such relevant.
While we are also heading towards the end of our episode, let's see maybe a practical example where a company succeeded in overcoming at least part of these hindering effects that we've discussed. And give us some background as much as you can on what was their initial situation and how did they transition towards a more innovative organization?
I can refer to a company that I was working with not too long ago as a consultant, and it was a technical company. The initial situation was that they lacked a customer-centric focus. It was a manufacturing company of components of heat and ventilation systems, and it was, as I said, technology-driven rather than marketing-driven. And what you see in general with these kind of companies that they have a tendency to overlook the customer. They think that they know themselves what the customer needs. They are predominantly process and technology-driven. And they have a tendency to think in technical features, completely ignoring the benefits for the customer, let alone the values for a customer. Their business process was designed to deliver what a customer asked for rather than what a customer would probably need. And I think a true innovative company should have that second approach to really be of value towards your customer. So you need to know what the customers of your customer need and then develop and design products that are giving an answer to that. In other words, I acted 100% on short-term requests of known questions. So a lot of repetition in this company. And they were very happy about their relationships. Very warm, comfortable. No one was ever challenging the status quo that I just talked about. So they were following the market and not leading the market. They were 100%, there you go, complacent. Circumstances suddenly changed. Legislation changed, technology changed. And as a consequence, customer needs changed and the company was not able to respond effectively. So what did we do then and what was my role in it? The turning point was probably, with a little help from my side, we completely changed their modus operandi, so the way they worked. Basically, we changed three things. Number one, they started acting on innovation by starting a customer-centric focus. For instance, an extensive international customer usage and attitudes study was executed before the innovation project or any other project started. This was the starting point and the benchmark for all their important decisions to make around innovation. Because you can easily end up with busy going nowhere. But many projects, even worse, if you start to speed them up, if you start to speed up the wrong projects that are not customer-centric, then it becomes a mess. And we changed that. We started with the consumer. Number two, they ensured top management commitment and also made line management responsible for 10 to 15% of their turnover by saying that should come from new products. Because what I saw also by experience that if the decision has to be made on innovation and the investments go up and market launch comes closer, then there are forces within the company who suddenly say, well, I'm not behind these ideas anymore. And they start to raise all kinds of questions just to frustrate the progress of an innovation project. But if you make these managers responsible, not only for their current profit and loss, but also for innovation, they become co-responsible for the success of innovation. And that is a way to deal with innovation and to make everybody responsible in the company. And they stopped to treat innovation as a process. When I stepped into this company, they had a more than 100-page process Bible with all kinds of schemes, how innovation would look like. And they had the impression that they were entirely in control of the innovation process. Innovations could simply not go wrong because of this Bible. Well, innovation is not a project, it's a journey. And people have to adopt the step, and you need that flexibility in every step you make. So we burned the Bible together, and we simply agreed that innovation is a bumpy ride, and that we have to prepare for the setbacks. And there comes more than one valley of death, and we have to deal with frustration and so on. So we installed a culture and a mentality that everybody accepted that it is a shared responsibility, while at the same time keeping a strong belief in innovation as a means to stay relevant and to stay ahead of competition. So this is basically what we did, and the company is more successful now in dealing with innovation.
I made some notes here, and also I could recall from my time in corporate innovation some of the bumpy roads that we had and some of the things that we had to overcome. But I really liked how you presented them and you showcased the example. And it is indeed very important to start from the customer. I think that is the essential part in innovation and in any strategy, to really not start from the numbers that most people in the boards talk about, but really start from the customer. Then the second part that I liked is this co-responsibility of the leadership and their commitment, especially when the projects become more successful. When innovation is just something there at the beginning, it's not a threat, let's put it like that, and it's easy to deal with. But when innovation starts to show results, then it's when you need to fuel with more money, with more resources, and you really need to have a co-responsible leadership team within the project of innovation. To accept the valley of death, yeah, really, really nice. Yeah, you're going to go there with some projects. And of course, the process, it is important to make sure that you can compare innovation projects, but it's not everything. And the process is not a guarantee that everything that you start in innovation is going to have to be successful. Mm-hmm. Maybe don't fall in love that much with the process. Have a process, but don't really fall in love with that and hold on tight to it as the golden truth. Go with the flow, learn and embrace failures, setbacks, and everything that innovation brings, because it will also bring success at a certain point. And maybe to conclude, and I think everything that you've mentioned and you've built on in our episode proves that what you said at the beginning, that there are no old roads to new directions. Maybe this is, in a way, the mantra of innovation, yes?
Yes, yes. I use this mantra already quite some time, but I have no reason to change it. It's really my strong belief.
Okay, so you heard him, people. There are no old roads to new directions. And the second favorite one for me, that a sleeping duck is easy to shoot. So keep that in mind. Be bold, be brave, start innovating. There is 100% no other way to go around in business today. Richard, thank you so much for being today with me. It was a real pleasure to have you here and to discuss on the topic of innovation. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Change That Works seeks to inspire a different way to transform organizations. Let's tune in again for our next episode.